Welcome to the rarely seen Mercedes implosion. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. It's kind of weird to even call it an implosion when one of their four cars still won a race, but here we are. Formula E, everybody. Hi, gang. Andre Harrison here. Welcome to episode 297 of Motorsport 101, and, oh boy, it wouldn't be a Formula E podcast without lots of carnage, lots of crazy, and as Cam eloquently put it, the paradoxical nature of Schrodinger's Formula E team, where a team can be simultaneously the best and the worst, both at the same time. It's very weird, and we'll get into the details of that very shortly. But with me, as always on the show, we have RJ O'Connell. Hello, sir.
Great to be back, as usual. And jumping the gun a bit, great to be back, Mr. Mark Marquez. Back on a bike. Yeah. In a MotoGP competitive session.
Yeah, for everyone watching this or listening in, you guys know how well Mark Marquez did last weekend. We don't.
Yeah, we know that in the first practice session, yeah. He got third after 265 days away from a racing motorcycle. What is he?
He's the greatest anomaly in motorcycle racing, and yeah, it's going to mean the championship might be a little less open, but it's going to mean MotoGP is better overall. And you'll hear more all about how this wrapped up in our future episodes.
Yep. Indeed. We're recording this on Friday, April 16th, so we just got through the first day of practice here, so we're all just a little bit mystified about that. And it's worth talking a little bit about it in the intro, because it's not really going to fit anywhere else. But, I mean, one tweet summed it up better than I ever could, and it was a tweet from former five-time MotoGP / creative Twitter troll Jorge Lorenzo. Now, Jorge Lorenzo at one point broke his collarbone, had surgery on it, had a plate fit in, flew back to a racetrack at Assen, and finished in the top five all in the same weekend. This man saw Marquez finish third in free practice one and tweet, and I quote, "What planet are you from?" Jorge Lorenzo said that. Lorenzo, who's probably a borderline top five rider to ever grace this earth.
Yeah, the other guy who's defined the last 10 or so years in MotoGP, yeah. Alongside him, Casey Stoner, etc. When he's just left without words at what something you've done, it's pretty special.
It's like everyone was delighted to have him back and then terrified once they saw him on an actual timing sheet. It's like, wait, he's not ridden a bike in 9 months and he's this close to us? On a bike that we know is probably a donkey.
Yeah. Ridiculous. By his own admission, he is nowhere near 100% and goes 7/10 clear of the next closest Honda guy. What the fuck?
It just doesn't make any sense. As said, more on Mark Marquez. Probably on episode 299, if I had to guess. More on that next week.
Probably.
In the meantime, yeah, we've also got to mention Ryan King, who's decided to bring an abomination of a football shirt onto the podcast that should be burned for all history. King, explain yourself.
Hey, I just wanted to wear something different today. You know, usually most Formula E episodes I do a little nod to our favorite Formula E commentator, but this week I decided to do something different.
And this is what you get. For those of you guys who are listening and not watching the video version, it's a 2018 Germany World Cup shirt. Now, for you guys that aren't soccer fans out there, King, why don't you enlighten the crowd about how well the reigning world champions Germany got on in that World Cup?
They didn't make it out of the group stage.
Ah! In a group that had Sweden and South Korea in it, Germany finished bottom of their group.
This was the greatest fusion of... This was the greatest alliance between Mexico and South Korea since a bunch of white dudes decided they wanted to start their own combination Korea barbecue / taqueria. know which, and you know which one. It likely exists in your hometown. You know damn well that it does.
I've got nothing. You know what, King? All is forgiven.
I hope Gordon Ramsay walks in the door and closes the place down on sight out of principle.
He's finishing the service and he's empty in the kitchen. Speaking of which, Cam Buckley is here. Hello, Cam.
Oh, everyone. Unlike King, who just wore an abomination of a shirt to the show, I'm just repping my favorite band. I'm simple.
I'm
like
also
that.
Repping my favorite team.
I'm a corporate simp.
How's Danny
and now Dre going? Is about to write. And now Dre's about to write an incredibly strongly worded email to the head of the FIA.
Yeah, dear FIA, I find your rules to target Mercedes deeply egregious. Lawyer up, you motherfuck. Anyway, in episode 297,
Silence Brand.
In episode 297 of Motorsport 101 tonight, we'll be talking about the Formula E Rome doubleheader we had this past weekend, which featured no less than three ridiculous notable incidents. Mercedes winning and having a double DNF all in the same weekend. René Rast goes René Fast, and then René Fast goes René into a wall, and that barely scratches the surface of the weekend in general. There's a lot to get through on this one. A lot of interesting stuff to get through here. We'll be talking about Mercedes weekend, we'll be talking about some of the bumps that were around, and we'll be talking about some of the quote-unquote, as we put in the set list, ruthless aggression that took part during this weekend, because it was rough.
Oh, was it ruthless?
Even by Formula E standards, this was ruthless, to say the least. So ruthless that John Cena came out and said it. So, yeah, this is going to be a wild one indeed. But general housekeeping, basically, you can find us real quick before we get into that. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101 if you're watching us on there. Hi! Subscribe, like the video, hit the bell. You get notifications as to when all your content goes up. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter, motorsport_101. And our handles are on the screen now if you're watching on YouTube. If not, they're at Harrison101HD. At Ryan Eric King, at RJ O'Connell, and at CBuckley917. You can follow us on Instagram as well, at Motorsport101Pod. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of the audio versions of the show. $10 gets you in the supporters club of our Discord server. And you can listen and watch these episodes live as they're being recorded. All those details and much more on our website, motorsport101.com. Yes, I know it's kind of via Discord.
Dre, you did the old, you did the old housekeeping, not the new housekeeping. With the
when you back us at the $10 level, you can watch us on an unlisted YouTube video that goes up before we put all the bells and whistles on it to make it look like all of our normal podcasts. Don't worry, I got you, fam.
Would you rather I have the old? Would you rather have that instead? Really? Silence, Buckley. Back in the corner. Right. After this quick musical interlude, we'll be back to talk about Formula E. But after all, we're in Rome.
Wait, aren't we all in corners? I mean, there's four of us. We occupy a corner of the screen.
Let's get into Formula E and a quick review on the first two races itself. Race one was somehow won by John Eric Verne, which was actually more surprising if you actually watched it compared to if you just read it out without context. It was a bit of a shithousery finish. Lucas Degrassi was looking pretty comfortable up front and was looking good to win. His drivetrain dies with about 4 minutes to go, and it led to utter carnage behind him as both Mercedes' car had to take evasive action. Stoffel spun out and hit the wall. Nyck de Vries also climbed into the back wall. Both Mercs failed to finish. It was a hot mess. The race ended under safety car. And John Eric Verne, after all of that, somehow, who didn't really look like he was going to win at any point, wins the race.
Mercedes victimized by the old open manhole cover special.
Yeah, the Baku, the Baku welcome this manhole special, indeed. The uplifting manhole was what probably led to Stoffel spinning out and hitting the wall. And as a direct result of that as well, Jaguar had a double podium finish with Bird and Evans second and third. We believe their first world championship double podium since before I was even born. 1991, apparently.
The good old days when they were in the World Sports Car Championship with Ross Braun's XJR 14.
You know that Ross Braun guy, it seems like he has potential as a car designer and a technical mind in the sport in general.
Yeah, what would happen to him?
Nah, I think he'll just fade away like the rest of Jaguars Motorsport.
I mean, Adrian Newey built a pretty neat Leighton house that one time, but can he really build a fast Williams? We'll see.
Yeah, that was before I was even born. Like, I was born in 92, like, for perspective here, folks. I mean, Jesus. Yeah, so Jaguar with that would also, I believe, would take the championship lead. Both championship leads by the time the weekend was all said and done, which is already causing King to break out in a cold sweat. Which is, even though he's on brand with the colors.
Exactly as predicted.
Of course.
Panasonic Jaguar leading both titles.
Yeah, of course. We're
terrible at this. I'm sorry.
Cam, I did not know that Jaguar was still owned by Ford, because looking at those Jaguars performing at Rome, I thought that they were a Ford GT40 in a historic car race.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there.
replace the Vietnam Fortunate Son meme with a sex type thing by Stone.
If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. Other notables in that first race, we had a nut incident. We'll break down a little bit in a minute with Andre Lotterer and Stoffel Vandoorne in what I describe as the world's fastest and also slowest game of chicken into a braking zone, where Lotterer was like, if gap, car, and Vandoorne was like, bet. Neither gave up position, and Lotterer got crunched in a very similar incident to Sam Bird we had in the season opener. It was ugly.
Lotterer's car after the fact was... It was the car equivalent of leave me in, coach, I can still play.
This is anti-super form of violence, by the way.
Indeed. He got 5 seconds out of the time penalty for squeezing Vandoorne out. Also, shout out to René Rast, who went from 21st to 6th. Race 2 had a different story. Stoffel Vandoorne got to the front early and then took off. King could finally say it's Stoffel season on Discord, unobjectively. It's been long overdue, King. Go on, have your moment. Say it's Stoffel season.
It's Stoffel season.
There it is. Beautiful. For now. Have those words resonate with your soul. So, King, when's the Luther Vandross cover album coming out?
Oh, God, please.
I will take down Riverside FM with my bare hands.
Riverside FM didn't pay us. We're paying them!
Indeed. They're that good.
We're paying them.
Yeah. Even though we had a final lap sprint finish at the end of the race, unfortunately René Rast went a bit too fast on this occasion and ended up putting it in the wall, forced a late safety car. We had a one-lap sprint finish, which, you know, we had, two big incidents of Eldora Mortara with arguably the save of the season to go alongside the overtake of the season so far, somehow didn't lose it, even though he broke... I think his foot was beyond the firewall at that point in time, and somehow was able to save it. 5 seconds later, behind him, Nick DeVries did not. And next thing you know, he's on the inside of a free-ride sandwich that was never going to work. He clatters into the side of Bird and Rowland. Messy. More on that in a minute. Also, RJ, I have to say it, get your mans. Nick Cassidy had his first ever pole.
What did I say about anti-super formula violence happening this weekend?
Yeah.
Nick Cassidy puts it on pole with one of the best qualifying laps I've seen in recent memory. Just completely out of control. Leads the field to green, goes into turn one, and spins.
It could have been worse.
All I can say, RJ, as a member of the Sebastian Vettel fan club is that solidarity, brother. I'm with you. Fight the power. You're not alone in all this. He takes a big swig of the drink. Yes, indeed. We also
had...
How
much absinthe is in there?
I also love that he also had Wemmy on the grassy violence as well. We'll get to that very shortly. Yes, again. A chop block scene around the world. And we were this close to celebrating the first podium for Norman Nato as well. But unfortunately, he got hit with the old power overuse penalty, which is now a straight disqualification. He went over the line at 0.0. Dang it. A podium ripped away for Norman Nato, which is a darn shame. So yeah, let's get into... we have to talk about Mercedes here, surely, first and foremost, because it's such a fascinating situation.
They're the most successful dumpster conflagration I've ever seen.
How do you sum up that weekend if you're Mercedes? Because it's like, on one hand, you won race two. On the other hand, you blew a ton of points in race one.
You stumble into the team hauler, broken bones, bleeding, like, hey, we won, guys!
Yeah, we'll take it. A brief rundown of their race weekend. Race one, double DNF. Race two, one DNF, but the race win.
How do you even describe that?
And pole.
Is that good?
Pole in the first race.
Yes, pole in race one.
Is that good?
What a mess.
It's
some of it's good. Like, a quarter of it is good. Three quarters of it are a goose egg.
Amazingly, out of all of that, their drivers are fourth and fifth in the Drivers' Championship, and they're second in the Team's Championship by quite a margin to DS Chitita in third.
Yeah. I think a lot has to do with that with the opening two rounds in Saudi Arabia.
Mm. Yeah. It built a good foundation. It could have been much worse.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. They are fast. This is still a little bad, but it could have been much worse.
It could have been much worse, but you look at Jaguar just keeps racking up the points, podiums upon podiums, and now they're out in the lead of the championship, both championships.
Both championships. Their drivers are 1 and 2, and they lead the Constructors' Championship now by 17 points.
They have 82 points this year. They've scored points, more points, in the first four races of this season than they did all of last season. Granted, I think part of that helps that they have two drivers that are proven commodities that are capable of scoring points. Sure. We love you, James Collado, but for some reason that just didn't work out. It happens.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens. I mean, Bird looks as good as he ever has. I know he's still a little bit on the over-aggressive side, but I think Bird is still as good as he's always been. Evans is just all-round solid.
He's more
solid.
The victim of over-aggression rather than the creator of it.
Yeah.
This weekend. He got injured by that De Vries crash. He had a swollen hand. I think he got caught by the steering wheel as he made an impact with the wall.
Ow. The old brisk bump. Never nice. I just can't get over this. How do you have 3 DNFs out of 4 cars and it still wasn't a terrible weekend? It's so strange if you're Mercedes. You've got to look at race 1. Also, maybe the first weekend of the series when Nick De Vries pretty much grand slammed the entire first race weekend. Or I say weekend in inverted commas. And then Stoffel goes out and, obviously barring the final lap sprint, Stoffel dominates race 2. Mercs are probably the best team on paper right now for raw pace.
Yeah.
It certainly looks that way.
Speed-wise.
Yeah. I think Van Dort's win in round 4... the second race of this weekend really reinforced that if they can just keep it on the road, stay out of trouble, they should be the odds on favorites to win the championship this year as we go further down the season.
But the problem for them doing that is that this is not Formula One. You don't just qualify if you have the fastest car 1-2 and run away with
it. There's that old chestnut.
Due to championship position, sometimes you're going to get the raw deal in qualifying.
The group one.
You're going to be in the middle of the pack. And De Vries and Van Dorn have been a mixed bag, to say the least, when fighting other drivers.
I worry about Nick in the mid-pack. I think he's a bit rough around the edges still. And that's not ideal. Like you said, as King attests with his Germany shirt, sometimes you can be put in the group of death. And sometimes there are casualties in the group of death. And I'm sure King can relate to this. You know?
Yeah. Though, mentioning the group of death, I think we should mention one of the other German teams, Audi. And
Oh my god.
We talk about Mercedes having maybe the fastest car. Audi also have a claim to, like, hey, maybe their car also might be one of the fastest cars in the field.
Yeah, all three of the German manufacturers have been very fast, but also completely incapable of having a clean run.
I like how we just forgot that there are four German manufacturers, and I think I know which one we're overlooking.
We're overlooking them because they're last.
Which one could that possibly be? The one with the fan favorite, yeah?
My steering rack is so tight.
They only have one fan, and it's a small Scottish woman, and she's only a fan of the Andretti portion of the team.
I have no idea who you're talking about here. None,
but yes. None. Audi. Look, and Lucas Degrassi.
Audi are... How do you throw away... on pace, they're good, but they are a mess on track. Yeah. Lucas Degrassi probably should have won race one. Powertrain failure.
Yeah.
Triggered the mess behind him.
Well,
they look great in race one.
Precisely, it was a drive shaft failure. So it wasn't it wasn't any of the electrical components. It was a mechanical failure.
Powertrain in the whole powertrain. Yep. It wasn't Audi specific, but I mean, René Rast went from 21st to 6th.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that was.
And then in race two, Degrassi picks a fight, ends up dead. René Rast pushes too hard, ends up dead.
We're just playing all the classics this weekend. Whammy versus Degrassi, getting into it on track. It's just like old times in the Gen 1 car.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to say nothing of the third German manufacturer, Andre needs to tone it down a little bit. Pascal needs to tone it up a little bit.
Pascal overtook somebody that... for the...
Oh my god! Ring the church bells!
You know it's bad when... Pascal... Honestly, for those who don't know, if you're in our Discord server, there's an events chat when we watch these motorsport events together. In race two, there was a good 10-minute tirade from Cam Buckley about Pascal not being able to overtake anybody. It was glorious.
He just sits there behind them watching their ass.
But the thing is, sort of, in context, we go back, going back to race one, the last time Pascal Wehrlein tried to overtake someone, he hip checked Max Gunther into the wall.
Well, he was driving a BMW, he deserved it.
It wasn't even it was an accident. It was a full blown rugby.
No, it was just
shoulder ball.
Yeah, fuck you. one of those vengeance passes you see on F1 2020.
This is like prime Scott.
Someone wronged you.
Yeah, this is like prime Scott Stevens just dumping somebody on the open ice.
straight into the wall. Yeah, it was brutal, and Pascal can't get the balance right.
Yeah, he either crashes into them on the way by or just sits behind them. Yeah, an excellent overtake in race two to take the lead.
Yeah.
And then when he got into a fight with Stoffel, just got caught napping three times.
Got caught napping by behind Alex Sims on the safety car restarting race one as well. Yep. I was like, Jesus Christ, Pascal, that's a rookie mistake. I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, I rate Pascal very highly, but he's got to cut errors like that out, because that's just...
Silly.
It's a rookie mistake, as you said. It's being asleep at the wheel. Lauterer is still on a points tally of zero.
Amazing.
Despite being very fast, despite being up front and being able to fight with yeah, Stoffel.
You would figure that the old guy would be having the problem being too tentative, and the young guy would have the problem being too aggressive. And oh no, this is not the case.
I don't think anyone living would give Andre Lauder the title of tentative.
No.
At any stage of his career.
No.
He always goes for it. I mean, as far as the incident with Van Dorn in race one, they played chicken with each other. Lauder put it into a gap that was probably borderline, and Van Dorn turned in like he wasn't there, so...
I just remember...
You play that game, you're going to win... play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
I remember turning into race one, because I joined in late. I saw that unfold, and I was just like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, honestly, my first instinct when I saw that was, it's lap four. Like... Why
you're attacking like it's the first, like it's the last lap, and you're defending like it's the last lap.
It's like the old MotoGP tradition of the code, where it's like you save the block pass till the last two laps, not the third lap of the Grand Prix, where next thing you know you've got Lotterer going full send, front tires steaming into an apex. It was always going to be low percentage because he came from a long way back.
Alpha Max Nova made a meme about this.
I mean, even previously to that, Van Dorn was going defensive against open air because Lauder wasn't near him yet.
Yeah, and right. then yeah, in,
it was just
in,
like really heavy-handed from both.
Like
of them.
in our group chat, we were like, wait, why is Stoffel being so defensive? And then next corner, that happened.
Yep.
Yeah, because he got an awful he took a shallow line in, got an awful run off the corner, and opened himself up to a dive bomb for the ages.
Yeah, just both of it. All of it.
Stoffel was living in the mindset of the MotoGP team putting out the sign saying, oh, Lauder is only zero back.
What? Good reference, King. Good reference. I like that.
Excellent reference.
He's still scorned by Polis Margaro at KTM at Asteria last year. With a ball that read 0.0. My man is deep in his feelings. Like, should we get some Drake on for you, King? Is that it, yeah? Are you deep in your feelings?
Bye.
Like next time.
Say that without crying.
Next time we'll find the 0.2 sign for the pit board, just in case. No, but all of it just seemed so unnecessary. Like, Lotterer attacking, Van Dorn defending, crunch time at that corner. Lotterer came off the better for it on track position because Van Dorn had to wait for the pack to get out of the way. The stewards... I think they were trying to basically balance the books by giving Lotterer a 5-second time penalty. Because on track position, he came off way better than Van Dorn. I think Lotterer came back in like 6th.
Yeah.
And then Van Dorn was like lower midfield, like 15th or something like that. So I think the stewards... I think that was a bit of a makeup call by giving Lotterer a 5-second time penalty, which I think was fine. Like I think it's a bit more balanced than that. But given how the result ended up, I think that was fine, personally. Didn't have a particularly big problem with that. The second big one...
Lots of aggression through the rest of the field.
Yeah, like we had Ollie Rowland, who I swear at one point was trying to literally murder someone by dive-bombing everywhere onto that... Just after the big sweeping town square.
He thought he was 2006 Valentino Rossi.
Yeah, just yeet everywhere, and it was ridiculous. Like both Nissans were out there with the red mist during this weekend, and what we saw in race two with Buemi on Lucas Degrassi. Now we all know these two have history, to say the least. I don't think they're good. I don't think Lucas is going to invite him to any Robo Race meetings anytime soon.
These two had history in the LMP1 class.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let alone now. And The next chapter of that book was written during race two, where, and to be fair, we didn't actually get a lot of decent camera angles on this one. It was kind of a strange one, because I think in real time... Not until later on did we get the full picture of what happened, but it seems that Buemi basically hit Lucas with the old sweeping chop block.
Yeah. And the old Pruitt fade.
Yeah, because pretty much the way to see seemed... Long straight of the track, the uphill run towards Piazza Gandhi, and Lucas Degrassi, he's already set up the defensive line. He's already on the inside. He already moved in. Buemi is chasing him up the straight. He's in the slipstream. He knows he could make a move, and it looks like he pulls out to make the overtake. After he's made contact with Degrassi already. He waited far too late and ended up turning Degrassi.
He just misjudged the gap.
Yeah, he misjudged the gap and turned Degrassi straight into the wall.
Yeah, it looked like a burnout takedown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the old slam to the side, trying to box him in, and that's what it looked like, and Degrassi came off worse for it. He was in the wall, and Lucas leaves with no points whatsoever.
Would have looked better in an Inferno van.
It probably would have done as it goes. Lucas, not best pleased. I thought it was a bit rich when he was in the car saying, oh my god, what is it with these aggressive moves? And I was like, Lucas. you can't really talk well, on this one, buddy.
You're throwing some mighty big stones from that glass house.
Yeah.
But the thing is, after that incident, and later on in that same race, we got another massive accident down the same straight.
Yeah, we did. This is the one that ended race two. Nick DeVries on Sam Bird and Oliver Rowland getting two birds stoned at the same time. I believe Jack Nicklaus called it a bird sandwich.
Beautiful.
This is not Formula E's attempt at jumping in the chicken sandwich wars of this day.
Yeah, where I don't know if Nick DeVries was spending a lot of time on iRacing, but run down the Piazza Gandhi, Bird, Rowland, side by side. There's some room on the inside. DeVries got one hell of a run, and he's like, I'm going to dive bomb the corner.
I have no idea what he was thinking. It was a... forget low percentage move. It was a no percentage move.
Zero.
It was minus two. Careless.
Yeah.
We've seen it a little bit this year. DeVries just... he's got to tone it down. Because it's just unnecessary.
The speed's always there. He's certainly a championship contender, but he's got to cut out those mistakes.
Yeah, it was.
He's better than what he displayed in that race.
Definitely. Yeah, that you can't go three wide into the apex of that corner. It's not happening. Forget about it. It's a zero percentage move. All three get clattered. Bird actually injured himself from the steering wheel impact. Had a pretty sore hand afterwards. The old steering wheel to the hand injury, which we all hate. You know, force feedback and all of that. Never fun. Rowland, I guess that was almost karmic justice for all the dive bombs he'd attempted over the course of that weekend. The racing gods did not shine on Ollie Rowland at the end of race two. And Nick DeVries was in your classic case of last lap yeet mode, essentially, on that one.
Five place grid penalty for the next event as a result.
Oof, that's nasty.
I'd say that one's pretty well earned.
Yeah, pretty much, and that's doubly nasty given how we know that Nick DeVries struggles with traffic, and now he's got, at best, he's going to be starting sixth next time round at Valencia. Good luck with that. Not great at all for Mercs, but also kind of great for Mercs. This is weird. Again, this is still really weird.
What the Cinnamon Toast fuck is Mercedes?
I don't know, okay? We've come full circle that we just don't know what this Mercs is. Because they have the fastest car, they're also a goddamn hot mess. The German manufacturers across the board can't seem to get all their ducks lined up in a row. And Jaguar leads the championships. Both championships!
Yeah.
The first time Jaguar has led a championship since 1991 on the world stage.
No, I do think it is important to mention that, you know, even with all these incidents bringing out the safety car, We had safety car starts. We had a lot of running behind the safety car this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, we had weather at the start of both races, and both races got underway under safety car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's just say where they put the starting grid and how turn one is laid out, just as we, you know, just talked about. In the dry, turn one at a race start would have been dubious. In the wet, impossible.
No luck. No chance. No chance.
Full speed into a 90-degree corner.
Yeah, that's... No, you can't... It's bad enough when they're going through there in the dry at full racing speed, it can get tetchy. In the wet, first lap of a race, forget it. No way.
Yeah, so...
You're already aggressive enough.
Yeah, so we ended up with both races over the weekend starting behind the safety car. And I think after the first race, a bunch of the drivers wanted the grid to be moved so they could be a standing start, but obviously that's not feasible to just move a race grid.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Should take the racing grid and push it somewhere else.
Push! Push!
Transponder Nightmare 101 right there. You don't want those problems.
Oh no, I'm not even talking about transponder, just infrastructure, because, like, there's someone... You know, on a gantry overlooking the track, and you have to move that whole thing.
Yeah, just gotta lift it and put it somewhere else. Gosh. Where's Patrick when you need him?
besides that, I think which race did we end up getting a green white checkered? The one where Nato
race two,
which we got in effect a green white checkered finish. Norman Nato finishes with 00, gets DQ'd. A bunch of other drivers real close to 02. And I think it was Susie Wolf, obviously, because Nato is one of her drivers. And she was, you know, one of the biggest issues that she brought up is because the restart was so late in the race, and they do energy deductions after after the safety car periods, that by the teams were caught out by how much the power was reduced by and how little time they had to reach.
We didn't find out how much energy they had reduced until like a quarter of the way through the final lap.
Yeah.
Because we thought they were in great shape. Suddenly it reduces and he's below 1%.
And there's still
most of a lap to go.
Yeah. And pretty much the point she brought up is like, the teams were informed far too late about how large the reduction would be. So teams who thought they were fine on energy weren't and had to drastically reduce speed. Some teams, like, obviously, you want to slow down to conserve energy, but you don't want to lose positions on track.
Especially in the final lap of a race.
And as a result, Nato was able to keep third ahead of Wehrlein and then lost third ahead of Wehrlein.
Yeah. That and the fact that...
Was he the only one disqualified?
Yes, Nato was the only one disqualified, because I think he was the only person who, you know, go back, look at the telemetry, because the TV graphics can be slightly off a bit, because, we only get the first place after the decimal point. Telemetry goes a lot farther than that, so they could see who really was through all of their energy
alone. 0-0-0.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, we're now going to describe it as a 00 and then an absolute zero for the telemetry we can't see on the timing tower. the Kelvin stat, we'll call it on this one. But yeah, like I said, Nato, very unfortunate. I mean, King, do you know how they, like, do they work this out before? I know the stewards just pick a number. Is there some set policy on this, or did it just wing it a little bit? I don't know what the process is.
So, I forget how the equation is, but it is kilowatt hour per minute behind the safety car. But I don't know what the exact number is, and of course you could fudge the numbers a bit, like how, you know, referees do in stoppage time in football, where it's like you could round it up, round it down. So there is a bit of leeway. So it is hard, but it is a semi hard number.
That threw them off a little bit.
Yeah,
I think something that threw them off a little bit as well is coming to the restart on the final lap, Stoffel Vandoorne made sure it was the final lap because he slowed the field down so much that the timer ran out and he got the white flag. I think that may have caused the system to take another theoretical lap away.
No, because it's time based. So
it's time. They would have been in major trouble, like most of the grid, if there was
a two-lap finale.
Everyone's disqualified for energy overuse. Nobody
could you imagine? Could you imagine if it was a two-lap finish? Oh boy!
Because the thing is, like, most of the teams, like, obviously, that was the predictable part. They knew how slow Vandoorne was going and that he wasn't going to make the line. So up until that point, they're like, okay, we have this much distance left. We have this much energy. You might as well just push. And then suddenly the reduction comes in. Oh, snap.
No. No, abort mission. Abort mission. That was bonkers. I feel a bit bad for Norman on that one. I mean, it does look like Venturi genuinely had the rug pulled out from underneath them a little bit. When you're only finding out basically 30 seconds into the final lap of the race, oh snap, you've actually basically got no energy left. It's a raw hand, but you know, unfortunately, it's the same for everybody. And they just weren't good on their batteries compared to everybody else, and that is a real unfortunate one. But darn shame. Formula E will be back, I believe, in Valencia next time round.
Yes, Valencia, and is rather soon. If we're watching this on release, it should be literally this weekend.
Sweet.
Yeah.
April 24th and 25th.
An actual purpose-built racetrack.
It's gonna be interesting to see how they lay it out.
Indeed. We also got full confirmation today as well that we're actually racing on pretty much the full Monaco Grand Prix layout this year.
With the old Saint-Devant. Yeah. Not the old Saint-Devant.
Yep. Oh, yeah. We don't have to worry about pit exits here. Just, you want to use the whole turn, you can use the whole turn.
The whole turn.
All the real estate.
Someone call Mahavir Raghunathan.
No. I will cut your cord. No. We are not doing that. But yes, Monaco, we're going to be getting the full Grand Prix layout of Monaco as well. And everybody, put your fucking stopwatches down. Do not compare them to Formula One times, for God's sake. You fucking anoraks. Enjoy some motorsport, for God's sake. I want to get that one out there now, because inevitably people will start doing this as a reason to have more F1 superiority complexes. I'm nipping that shit in the bud from now, okay? I'm not stand for this.
That's the way to be.
Anyway, quick look at the championships before we get out of Dodge. Drivers-wise, the bird is still the word. He leads the Drivers' Championship with 43 points. As mentioned, it is Jaguar 1 and 2. I still can't quite believe I'm saying that. Mitch Evans is second on 39 points. Robin Frins quietly going about his business in third with 34. He's 1 point ahead of the two Mercedes, who we still don't quite know how they're here either. Stoffel Vandoorne on 33. Nick De Vries on 32. As is Pascal Wehrlein on 32. Once again, he's on the tiebreaker with Nick De Vries, but once again, he can't overtake anybody, so of course he's behind Nick.
But Wehrlein's the only guy.
Please, just start overtaking people, Pascal. Please.
You know what? He's got points in all four races so far.
Yeah, very few people can say that.
Nobody else can say that.
Yeah, it's like, we have four races. We are four races down in a championship that has 25 points for a win and four for a pole position, and the championship leader has 43 out of a possible, 112, I think? I mean, Jesus! Math!
Survival of the surviving.
Right, like, that should be some perspective for you right there. You've had four Grand Prix, and it's the same point system as Formula 1 in its basic form, and Sam Bird has the championship lead with 43 points. That just sums it up right there. In the Constructors' Championship, Jaguar, again, we can't believe we're saying this, lead the way with 82 points. It's almost as strange as Mercedes in second with 65. It's almost even stranger as DS Chichita, the reigning champs, are on 46, and are already 36 points off the lead. They've got some work to do there. Envision Virgin Racing on 37, then Porsche on 32, and then Venturi on 31. Could you imagine what that extra Norman Nato podium would have done? It would have leapt them all the way up to friggin' third.
Just imagine if Andre Lotter could score anything.
It's a one-car team, right? It's literally a one-car
team. It's not the one car we thought it would be.
The complete opposite.
The craziest part about this is that they're right behind Virgin, and Virgin only have 2 points finishes this entire season out of 8 starts.
Oh, it's everyone tripping over their own dicks except Jaguar. Who, by the way, going into this weekend, had only scored podiums or DNFs. Word to Jimmy Broadbent.
Win it or bin it. The Leeds United of Formula E, we don't do draws around here. We're either winning or we're getting stuffed. There is no middle ground on this one here. So it's win it or bin it all the way. The Lorenzo Baldessari of doing things. Oh, what a hot mess. Like I said, Formula E will be back in Valencia probably this time this weekend, the time you're listening to this show. There'll be more on that in probably about a week and a half, 2 weeks' time. So we can look forward to that one. By then, this network will have a number of episodes beginning with a 3, which is a terrifying thought for everybody involved.
What a school project.
I'm a grown man now with a beard. I can't really call this a beard with King next to me, because he is actually fucking grows and shit. Mine's just patchy. It just doesn't work. But it's the one superiority he's got over me besides his terrible shirt. It's good. We have to balance the book somewhere, King. I have the cool hoodie. You have the cool beard. You can't have it both ways. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's nature. Anyway, let's get out of here. Before we get out of here, let's general housekeeping one more time. YouTube.com/Motorsport101. We're on Facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter @Motorsport_101. Our Twitter handles @Harrison101HD, @RyanEricKing, @RJOConnell, and @CBuckley917. We're on Instagram @Motorsport101Pod. And you can follow us financially if you want to back us there on Patreon, patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all the audio versions of the show. You can upgrade to the $10 version for the video versions, and you get the ability to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, unlisted, on YouTube, as well as being in the supporters club of our Discord server as well. Deep breath. And yep, you can get all that information and more on motorsport101.com. Thank you very much, everyone who's backed us on there. We'll be back next week with 3 shows. In what I genuinely think could be the biggest weekend of motorsport in 2021. This is huge. We have Formula One at Imola. We have MotoGP and the Marc Marquez return at Portimao. And we have IndyCar season opener at Barber as well. All of them will be reviewed on separate episodes in the next week or so. It's going to be fun. It's going to be carnage. They'll probably all end up being 4 out of 10 races besides MotoGP, because that's how the racing gods decide to fuck with us.
We're going to have 3 episodes. You know what that 3 is for? It's for Dale.
I'm getting my second shot on April 29th. You know who would have turned 70 years old on April 29th? Dale. Kind of ironic.
Vaccinating for Dale.
Kind of ironic considering I'm getting vaccinated with Mark Martin's former sponsor. No, I am not getting injected with Viagra. Stop asking.
Of course, RJ would drop that comment or recording on what we call National Horny Day.
No, you didn't have to mention it. You didn't have to mention it.
It was too big an open goal not to mention. And on that note, we're getting the hell up out of here before Cam starts showing us little Buckley. Until then, I've been Andre Harrison. They've been Ryan Eric King.
Little Buckley's still bigger than Big Harrison.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Later, y'all.